It's the 31st of January, and it's an exciting time to be alive. But let's keep things, I say so, yeah, I say so. It is exciting, but let's keep things towards investments here. So today we're going to go through overview of investment in the universe and should finish up risk versus return. If we have time, we'll do sample portfolios. So you are able to, every day, to review your notes, right? Go over the materials, everything. Have you checked the website, downloaded the presentations, the documents and everything, the presentations, so that you can goof with them and make flashcards and the like? Because I'm going to ask you, and you got to study. I know it's, oh my God, it's students have to study. Yes, you have to study. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? Okay, you can't create a hostile environment. Okay, let's hear it.
So my grandparents immigrated from the Philippines, maybe like, I don't know, 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so growing up, my grandma was always kind of like heavy set, like a little more plump, you know, like as most grandmas are. And so when she turned 60, she decided to start walking 5 miles a day. So she's 88 now, and we don't know where the hell she is.
Yeah, right. That's like the one where the doctor comes out to the husband and says, well, you know, we're not sure. The test got messed up. But either your wife has AIDS or Alzheimer's. And the guy says, what should I do? He says, well, on your way home, drop her off about 2 miles from where you live. And if she comes home, don't have sex with her. Dumb. This is good dumb commercial. We don't know where she is. Started walking 5 miles a day. We still know where she is. Okay. All right. So we're going to get started today. What's the website? Wonder Professor. Right. And so we go to Business 123. We scroll down and mess with some of these things. But this is what we're interested in. The presentation, which once you've downloaded it to your computer, you can do pretty much whatever you want with it. You know, assuming it gets started, and then we're up to slide, right, 14. But first, we want to pass these guys out. These are little, I call them response cards. Take investment cards, yeah. Take an A, B, a C, and a D, and we will use them today, and hang on to them. You know, put them in your back of your notebooks. Don't lose them. Because at San Diego State, where they have a whole lot of money, more money than we do, they have little buttons on the desk where you can press A, B, or C, or D, and it comes up on the screen. We don't have that. So we spared no expense and made these things. Okay. So, as we said, we're going to go through the overview of the investment universe. Am I forgetting something? Oh, the book. I have a few copies still left. I bought a bunch when I taught at the prison, because they don't have a library, they don't have internet, and I would lend them to the students. And so this is one of the two fabulous books. There's plenty of room up front, come on up. Plenty of room over here. This is one of the two books that are excellent books for beginning stock investors, mostly. Or any investors, but it concentrates on stocks. And I have a few copies, so if you want to borrow it, in fact, I have one of my students who had took off a week to go down to Puerto Vallarta. She sent me a picture of her reading the book on the beach at at the Playa Los Muertos. So but that was cute. So come to my office hour, and you can borrow one of these books. They're easy to read, so it's a lot of fun. This guy is awesome. We'll come back to him, Mr. Peter Lynch. Okay, investment return. Look, folks, return is very straightforward. How much did you start with? After so many years or days or whatever, months or whatever, hopefully years, how much did you wind up with? That's your return. Now, we often think of the total dollar return. Did I bring my water? No, I didn't, dude. But more importantly, we need to know the percentage return. Why? Because that allows us to compare investment alternatives. What can we get from a reasonable amount can we get? Did you have a handout? No. Are you wanting to add to class? Okay. Introduction to investments, right? Introduction to investments. Anybody else not have a handout? Okay. Here you go. After class, I'll give you an iPad. Okay? Plenty of room. Okay. What are the reasonable rates of return that we can get from our investments. But whenever we talk about return, we also have to talk about risk. You cannot separate the two. You must look at the risk involved in any investment alternative. The problem is that risk is difficult to measure. In fact, it's impossible to measure. There are many ways, all of them imperfect. One popular measure, and the one that we will concentrate on, is called standard deviation. Now, don't worry. You don't have to know statistics to take this class. It's already done for us. The standard deviation measures the volatility. There's that fancy word that means I lost a lot of money. In any given year, there's about a two-thirds chance that the return of the investment will be within one standard deviation of the historical average. What does that mean? Hang on, we'll get to it. We'll see what it means later on. There's some room over here in the corner up here, and one right there, yes. Okay, but suffice to say that the higher the standard deviation, the more riskier the investment, as measured by an imperfect measure called standard deviation. There's a couple of rooms, spots over here. So this is what we're going to take a look at today. We're going to do a thumbnail view. This is our review of the investment universe. We're looking at it from far away, of equities, stocks, common stocks to be specific, fixed income securities, bonds, loans, short-term investments, also called cash, mutual funds, which do the investing for us, the investment companies, and then we'll take a look at some others that are not that popular, and for the vast majority of us, we're not interested in them. Hybrid securities, preferred stocks, convertible securities, convertible preferred, convertible bonds, real estate, physical, hard assets, and then derivatives, which are extremely dangerous. Okay, so let's get started. Now, we want you to concentrate on what's up here. Whatever you've heard, whatever you can, previous people have tried to pound into your head, you know, you can hang on to it, you can keep it, but just for the most part, make sure you understand what's in the presentation, okay? So that's your study guide. Go on the study guide, then the presentation, however you make yours. I like flashcards. I think flashcards are cool. You put the term on one side, you put the definition on the other side, and then you quiz yourself and you can quiz each other. But stocks are also called equities, which is a fancy way of saying ownership. And the real term, the term that you won't hear too many people say unless they're trying to differentiate between preferred stock, is common stock. And where does the term come from? It's a long time, 400 years ago, when the people who owned the stocks were shareholders in common. That was the legal name. So that's why they're called common stock. But most people don't use that term. They just call them stocks. They represent ownership in a corporation. And if you've taken, or when you take Business 120, you'll learn more about business structures, sole proprietorships, partnerships, LLCs, limited liability corporations, and then a corporation. Why? Why would you want to own stocks, other than every day they talk about them on the news? Well, the two major benefits of stocks are dividends, something we don't talk about that often, and capital gains, what we always concentrate on. Is this stock going to go up in value? So the optional payments to shareholders, and then capital gains, shares increase in value. Now, oh yeah, the investment club. The investment club meets today, I'll try to remind you, I told you about that one, at 12 noon, right in 222. Okay, sorry. One thing we don't talk about, and you would learn about in Business 120, is the limited liability. When you invest in a stock, your investment is limited to what you put up. You buy one share for $100, and that company goes bankrupt. It doesn't matter how many debts that corporation has incurred, they can't come after you. After the stock goes to zero, that's it. That's your liability. Now, there are situations, and you would learn about these in more detail in that 120 class, where people have tried to use corporations, one of them is currently the president, to hide debts and then say, oh, you know, it's not my problem, it's the corporation's problem. But then the courts do what's called piercing the corporate veil getting behind the corporation and saying, no, use this corporation as a way to hide your debts. That is not going to happen with the companies that we look at here. We're going to look at real companies that are in business to make money, and the stocks that we invest in, that we talk about investing, are not that kind of sham. What's the risk level? What's the risk level of stocks? High, yeah. Sometimes moderate, as we looked at Nestle, but it depends on the company. But just consider stocks are normally high risk. Some are very high, speculative risk. And what we say is that stocks are volatile. You like that word? Volatile. It means I lost a lot of money. If someone, you hear someone say, hey, how was that stock you bought? Oh, it's been very volatile. That means they bought it for $12 and sold it for 30 cents. Ooh, yeah. You know anybody who's done that? It was actually $11.88. I know someone who's done it. I've known him all my life. He's kind of goofy, teaching investments at Southwest. It was a really good company. So are we prepared to lose money? Yeah, you're gonna lose money sometimes, folks. It's just part of the game. But if we take a long-term perspective, we find that stocks over the long term have done 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%. Some have done better, some have done a whole lot worse. I try to tell people 8 to 10, okay? I don't want to get people too excited. 8 to 10%. Because then their eyes get all wide. If you can do 8, 9, 10%, as we'll see later on, you're going to do okay over the long term. They should be considered a long-term investment. Now, let's take a look at the 2008 definition. Stocks are equity investment instruments designed to lose value. Right. And we'll see what happened in 2008, dear students. It was like a bolt of lightning from the sky. And I'll never forget talking to my buddy, who is much more aggressive than I is. I'm a buy and hold kind of guy. He's a lot smarter too. He went to MIT. And we're sitting there at lunch talking about our commiserating. And he said, how bad is it? Well, we're down about 40%. And I said to him, because he's much more buy and sell. I said, how about you? He said, about 40%. I was like, oh, I didn't have to, because he's always buying and selling and buying and selling. I don't have to do that. And we're still down about the same, 40%. No. Okay. Now, the other side of the coin are bonds. And you'll hear people use the term fixed or fixed income securities. And these are loans. So when you invest in stocks, you're an owner. When you invest in bonds, you're a loaner. You're lending your money. You get to play the part of the bank. And we lend our money to major corporations. We lend them to municipalities. What are they? State and local governments, such as City of Chula Vista, the Sweetwater and School District, the bridge authorities. Yeah, it's okay, no problem, thank you. And then the federal government, the Treasury. When the Treasury needs money, people say, oh, they just print it. No, they don't. The Treasury prints money for circulation, but that's controlled by the Federal Reserve Bank. The Treasury needs money, they float bonds. They sell bonds to investors. And what do we get from them? We get interest and a promise to repay the debt, a promise to repay the principal. Everybody get their ABCDs? Everybody get ABCDs? Did you get them? Okay, thank you. He's organized them. Yes, I'm not much for organization. Okay, do most people pay back their debts? So we should expect bonds to be far less risky, far less volatile than stocks. And it's true. Over time, they have been. They go down every once in a while. Huh? We'll discuss that later on. But they are far less risky. Now, your first lesson in risk versus return. Less risk. Everyone should say less reward, less return. Like we tell you, less risk, less reward. Right. And so from bond, now notice I have 4 to 8. We really should change this to like 3 to 6. Because for decades, bonds are returning 4, 5, 6. on the government municipal bond, 6, 7, 8 on the corporate bonds. The higher the return from the bonds, the more risky the bonds are. But lately, bonds returns have been on the low end of the spectrum. And for a while, their bond returns were just horrible, 1 or 2%. In other parts of the world, they still are very bad. In the United States, I think the 10-year bond is up to almost 3, like 2.8 or something like that. I have to go check. But there's one seat, two seats over here in the corner here. Oh, no, I'm sorry, John. That's okay, no problem. Okay, so less risk, less return. Questions? So tell me, Lee, a loan? How do you invest in a loan? But as we said on Tuesday, when you're a bank, the loan that you went to make at the bank is the bank's investment. You see? They look at you, hey, he's going to pay, she's going to pay me interest, she's going to pay me my principal back, and that's how the bank makes money. And that's how you as a bond investor can do it. Okay, so they're good intermediate term, and some are long-term investments. Short term, there's a way to do it, but we'll leave that for other investments. Now, what's the 2008 definition? Bonds are fixed rate investment instruments designed to lose money. Yeah, 2008, the bonds got cratered, except for treasury bonds. Now, the next category is sometimes often euphemistically referred to as cash. Well, it's not money. It's not money sitting under your mattress. A better name for these are short-term instruments, short-term vehicles, short-term investments. These are guaranteed or pretty darn close, right? So this is money that you need in the short term. You received your student aid, say, your financial aid. Are you going to throw it at the stock market? I hope not. If you do, good luck. Because the stock market can drop 10%, 20% in a month, in a week. It's done it in one day. We'll take a look at October 19th, 1987. You need it somewhere where it's safe. And so that means you need very low risk of losing principal or basically no risk. And what kind of reward are you going to get? Yeah, very little. I'm putting here 2 to 5%. But right now, it's 1 to 3%. Since the Great Recession, interest rates have fallen incredibly low. Some people use this term, and I like this term. It's a place to park your money when either you need it for the short term or you're not sure. You just got an inheritance or something like that. You're not sure what to do with it. You want to take Business 123, Introduction to Investments. So stick it in the bank so that you're not going to lose it. And we'll briefly discuss an emergency fund. We talk about this more in 121, the financial planning and money management. So let's take the 2008 definition. Short-term investments are instruments designed to accept what remains of investors' money after they've given up on stocks and bonds. Ooh, is it too late to get out? When do you hear people saying that? What's the answer? Yeah, it's too late to get out. Now's the time to be getting in. Okay, now here's some examples, and we'll come back to this and get them out of the way next Tuesday. These are deposits at banks, credit unions, savings bonds, treasury bills. Hang on, we'll take a look at treasurydirect.gov. Certificates of deposit, money market accounts, money market mutual funds. And then the two that really aren't for us small investors, a corporate paper, what a silly name, and banker's acceptance notes. So you don't have to, don't worry about this, we'll come back to that later. Now, mutual funds. You can't help but hear about these things because they advertise the guts out of them. But low risk, I forgot to write this down. Low risk, low return. Right. Now, mutual funds, the legal term, and I wish the industry would, you're not going to hear the legal term unless you work in the industry, investment companies. A mutual fund is a type of investment. There are other investment companies, but it's the biggest type. And so we don't feel very comfortable choosing individual stocks or bonds. And so we find a mutual fund, and they do it for us. They invest on your behalf. Or, more likely, you're going to get out there into the real world, and get a job, and they're going to offer you an employer-sponsored plan, a 401k plan or some other type of tax-qualified account. And 99% of these things have, well, I'm not sure if that's the right number, but the vast majority of them have mutual funds as their choices. You may run across one that allows you to invest in individual stocks, but that's the exception, not the norm. So what is a mutual fund? Well, it's a company that pools the investor's money. That's the, hence the term mutual, right? And invests in a diversified portfolio of securities. And so what we get from this is instant diversification. And I don't care what anybody says, unless you're willing to accept a ton of risk, diversification is a good thing. And you then get professional money management. And some of these people are very, very good, and some of them ain't so good. And we'll take a look at some that are good, and some of them ain't so good. And you're going to, this is next, that's our very next chapter, by the way. Very popular. And of course, we don't know where to put them here. We don't know what to put here because it depends on what the mutual fund invests in. Some invest in stocks, bonds, cash. Some invest in all blend of all three. And what was the 2008 definition? Yeah, them too. Is it too late to get out? Yes, it's too late to get out. And here, I am really proud. See, I did this, Griff. Are you proud of me? Because I'm very autistic. I mean, not artistic. My brother got the artistic gene. And so here we are. We're the little people. And more of them are women. Why? Because women are getting smart. You want to hear a joke? This is a different joke. Okay. God was talking to Adam, right? And Adam was you know, he's kind of trying to work this out. You know, he's a brand new human. And he says, God, why'd you make Eve so pretty? And God said, that's easy. That's so you'd love her. And he said, and Adam said, and why'd you make her so soft and curvy? God said, that's easy. That's so you'd love her. And Adam said, and why'd you make her so dumb? God said, that's easy. That's so she'd love you. So women are getting smarter, right? And so more and more women are investing. And we give our money, $50, $100 a month, more if we can afford it, through our paychecks, through our checking accounts. And we give it to the people in the top hats. And more, that's a woman, by the way. More and more of them are women. These are the money managers. And it turns out, women, it's already been statistically shown. Now I'll leave it to you to figure out why. But women are better investors than men. Empirically shown, statistically. It is a statistical reality that women do better than men investing. You decide why. And they create this pool of money, which I know looks like a potato, but it's a pool of money. And there are millions of people giving billions of dollars away. Not giving away, but giving them to the mutual fund managers. And so when they have a stock mutual fund, they don't buy 5 or 10 stocks. They buy 100 or 200 stocks. So you see instant diversification. So your $50 buys 25 cents of Apple and 50 cents of Home Depot. If what? Oh, obviously, yes, much less than the share it costs. Because they have the billions of dollars, they buy the shares.
You have the ability to back that.
No, you don't. No, you can buy one share, right? Especially now with commissions so low. The one company, Robinhood, anybody? They're not even charging commissions. They say they're not charging. Are they charging you? Yes, and we'll learn how when we get to stocks in Chapter 5. They're charging you, folks. A lot less than they used to. It's a lot. The commissions have come down quite a bit. And then they are supposed to know what to do. And as we said, some of them do a good job, and some of them not so good. If they buy bonds, it's a bond mutual fund. If they buy the short-term instruments, the cash instruments, it's actually called a money market mutual fund, but you will not hear money market mutual fund. You will just hear people call it a money market. And then we start to see the explosion of different types of mutual funds, which with what is called a balance fund. It invests both in stocks and bonds, which is the balance. Cool? And approximately 50% of American households own mutual funds, or used to. I think it's down to 45%. Okay, cool. You like that graphic? Well, our second chapter, after this week, next week, probably on Thursday, we'll start on mutual funds. Why? Because they're so important. As we said, the chances of you investing in a mutual fund through your employer sponsored plan are very, very high. So we'll get them right away. There's a conundrum, a problem when you teach investments. Do you put mutual funds first before you get to stocks and bonds? Or do you put stocks and bonds first and then get the mutual funds? There are advantages and disadvantages of both. I feel that it's more important to get people interested in mutual funds. Question?
When you're talking about retirement,
you
can't typically get to
it. Oh, no, that's not true. Efren, right?
Yeah.
Efren said you can't typically get to it until you're a certain age. No, you can get to it, but they're going to smack your hand, right? Or there are some exceptions. First-time home purchase, higher education, if you come down with a serious illness. There are exceptions you can get to.
Their benefit for you.
No, they want you. That's the reason they give you the tax break. That's why they call them tax qualified. They're giving you a tax break. They want you to put that money away, kiss it, and let it go. And they that would be a problem, and that's some of the problems. Because even in the 401k, even in the Roth IRA, even in the other types of retirement accounts, you can still liquidate your investment by taking it from stocks and bonds and putting it into cash. You don't take the money out. You've just changed the investment. And so that's still a problem. Now, you're right. They don't want you to take it out because they want you to prepare for your... I hope they help. Maybe there's some goofballs in Congress. You know, it's the vast majority of people are good. You know, they really, it's that 1 or 2%. But then again, we elected them. So. It's a joke. Yes, sir. Yes.
So, you know how the stocks went up after the presidency? Do you think it has anything to do with the tax plan?
No. They were going up already. We don't want to get too off base, but since now a lot of it is pure dumb luck, you know. The Republicans are very good at making people believe that they're, you know, pro economy and pro business, and they do have some issues that are a little bit more than the Democrats. But both parties believe in free enterprise, and the Democrats are very stupid, very spineless. They're not good PR people. They believe in free enterprise. And then you hear a couple of people saying, we need socialism. Like, yeah, well, we have socialism, but not in the places where it makes sense. Do you really want to have several police departments competing for your protection dollars? Right? You understand? And so it was already going up because of an expansion that started after the 2008 crash. And so Obama, which they love to paint as, you know, socialist and Muslim, and he was one of the best presidents for the stock market, right? But here's the dirty little secret. The president has very little to do with the economy. The president can screw things up royally, but in general, we're responsible for the economy. It's a fact that we get on our pants and our clothes, go to work, produce the goods and services that we then consume. That's what's good for the economy. And we got stupid, right, which we do every once in a while, and we thought that housing prices would continue to go up and up and up and up and never go down. And then people lost, you know, unbelievable amounts of money. The banks lost unbelievable amounts of money. But then we slowly came back. So that was going on before he started, before Trump got in. Yes, question?
So, like, would giving, like, I guess business owners tax breaks for their business, that would help stocks because they would be able to...
Well, there's no doubt that it did help stocks somewhat, right?
Oh, okay.
There's no doubt. But at the same time, did you notice that after the tax breaks in late 2007, in January, the market went, whee! Do you remember that last January? And I don't think it was the tax breaks. I think it was Bitcoin. People started getting, yippee, Lamborghinis, we're all going to be rich. And it spilled over into the stock market. And then what happened? Boom, this is what happens. You know it's coming. You don't know when, but you know whenever there's a euphoria, rich, 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 ooh, is it too late to get in? Yeah, it's too late to get in. And we had, the investment club had a a forum. We had a seminar last year on Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies, and these guys were gung-ho. Even though it had dropped quite a bit from around, almost at 20,000, it dropped down to about 14,000. They were still gung-ho. What is it down? Down to now?
About 3,000.
3,000? Yeah. And my son didn't even want to tell me. He had to, because I do his taxes, right? He comes up to me and goes, well, I need to ask you a question. Like, what? I got this file of transactions. We have to put it in my taxes. I said, good. Okay, what is it? He goes, oh, it's cryptocurrencies. He didn't want to tell me, because he knows what I think about them. And so I said, great, you know, that's fabulous. And he's done well. He did well. And we convinced him. He started with 1,000. Turned it into 15,000, and we convinced them, at least take 1,000 out, my wife and I. I didn't say a word. My wife did. I told my wife. And she he took 1,000 out, and then we haven't discussed it since. It was 8 months ago or so. Almost 10 months ago. So I hope he didn't lose everything. But he didn't lose it because he took 1,000 out. Questions, thoughts? Did I get to answer your question?
No, yeah, you did.
Yeah. Remember, the president gets the blame, gets the praise. But the reality is, it's us. It's us, yes.
You kind of hinted that you have an unfavorable opinion about Bitcoin. Would you consider it to be kind of like a little bit of a scam?
Why wouldn't you? Scam is such a loaded, loaded term. It is pure speculation. And we'll spend some time at the end of the semester. But if you want to learn quicker, come see me or we'll do something real quick. It is purely buy low, sell high. The greater fool theory. Someone out there is a greater fool than I am. So I will buy this, which really has no worth whatsoever, and then I will hope that somebody else pays a higher price for it and I can sell. That's it in a nutshell. Some of them are. Others aren't. But some of them buy them for that reason alone. And that's another issue. No, it doesn't exist for that. I mean, for some people, yes. You're right. For some people, that's why it exists.
For people who have a lot of money, they can't use actual money.
Yes. So, yeah, there's some of that, too. And that's an argument I've had with my son. He goes, he likes that aspect. He likes the aspect that it's anonymous. And I say, look, you know, the proper authorities, because this is how it works, right? The executive branch investigates. They think something's hanky-panky going on. They go to the judiciary. They show the judge their evidence. The judge says, okay, they sign the warrant. The executive branch goes back and serves it to whoever's doing the transaction, the exchange. And if you have an exchange where it's totally anonymous, you see you have a problem. And so that can't continue in my humble opinion. Other people say, no, that's what we need. So we can have drug dealers and untaxable plus illegal activities and arms. Let's get on. Okay. Now, so these are the big four, folks. These are the big four that we're going to spend most of our time on. These four right here. So let's take a look at some of the others. Hybrid securities. And we really will take a short period of time on these after we've gone through stocks and bonds. And the two biggest examples of these are preferred stock and convertible securities, which are convertible preferred and convertible bonds. Now, I hate this term, preferred, because what people say, well, wouldn't I want preferred stock instead of just common stock? And the answer is no, you don't want it. Why? Not because you might not profit from it, you may. But the fact is that preferred stock is more for corporations. Corporations own preferred stock. You can, as an individual investor, buy them. And they have a good history of paying dividends, but for the most part, they're not for us. Convertibles, it sounds sexy, right? Convertible, wind blowing through your hair. But in general, they're just not for the vast majority of us. Our hybrid investments are designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments, the bonds, with the opportunity for capital growth of equity investments, stocks. And so what you'll hear in the industry is some people categorize these with stocks, some people categorize them with bonds. But in general, whenever you try to get the advantages of two different systems, you also wind up getting the disadvantages. So yeah, you have the best of both worlds, but you also have the worst of both worlds. And the tax consequences are such that, as we said, preferred stock are better off for corporations. So that's all you have to know for now. You understand? This is all you have to know. Other popular ones are real estate, obviously. And we'll spend a little bit of time on real estate at the end of the semester. If you really are interested, come see me. We have real estate classes. I'll tell you what I think is a good way to get involved in the real estate industry. It's immense, and it's tricky, folks. It's a great way to make money, but it's also a great way to lose money, and it's a pain. Being a real estate investor has a high PETA factor. Have you heard the PETA factor? The PETA factor. Pain in the... Yeah, right. And so don't get me wrong. Real estate is a phenomenal alternative. Here, it's very difficult. And you notice that people are now moving over to TJ because they can't afford to live here anymore. Mm-hmm. So if you want to invest in real estate, go look at Tijuana. Precious metals, jewels, art collectibles, tax advantage investments. If there is sufficient time and interest, which there usually is, we'll look at some of these, especially real estate. By the way, none of these were spared in 2008. People would say to me, well, aren't you upset about the stock market? And I say, well, you know, I'm happy about losing 40, 50%. But the real estate agents, real estate investors lost everything. Everything. Every dime they put in. And then they still owed $100,000 or $200,000 that they were never going to pay back. And that's why the Federal Reserve chairperson said, I take him at his word, I held my nose and I wrote the check to bank out, to bail out the banks. This woman is, your name again is? Mary Bell is nodding. Nodding. Did you get hit?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're not alone. Millions. Two, three million. You know, the estimates, you can't really know. But all around the... Well, no. It was worse on the left coast and on the right coast. And, you know, Chicago got hit too. But in the middle of the country, they did... You know, some people got hurt, but not as bad. And Canada actually held up pretty well. Around Toronto got hurt pretty bad. Happened in a couple other countries too. Spain. Cool? Okay, now, derivatives. Oh, I'm sorry. What a question.
Okay, yes. So, as far as the losses, is there a difference between, like, collecting, like, busted cars? Or, sorry, I'm trying to get my words in order. So I know a couple who owns like a classic car restoration company, so they're business owners, but they also collect them for the same
Buying and selling them, yeah. Yeah, you know, for some people, it's a labor of love. It's a hobby. They love it, and they can make money off it. I do know somebody who does invest in cars, and he's a crack engineer. He's a phenomenal engineer, and he buys old BMW 2002s. And you ever see these cars, you guys are gals who are into cars? That's not the year. In the 1970s, they made these boxy cars called the 2002. And they are a hot commodity. They race them. They're pretty, and they're cool-looking cars, too. And when he said, one of his friends said, he bought a 2002. I said, a 2002 what? The 2002. I said, you mean a BMW 2002? Where the hell did he find them? Turns out they're everywhere. You know, they're in people's garages, of course. People will drive them to work. But there's a whole community, and he's made a lot of money doing it.
So I guess my question would be, is there like a line between like a business and like an investment?
Very good question. Very good question. That's, yes, there are. And the line moves depending on who you are. The IRS wants you to make money. If you start deducting expenses for this business, right, and then after 2 years or 3 years you don't start making money, the IRS will come back and say, oh, no. That's a hobby. Okay, so the line is fungible. You like that word, fungible? The line is fuzzy. And so your job is to make money eventually. And then you can call it a business, and the IRS will be happy with you. And, of course, some people don't even, they never even report the income or the expenses.
They want you to make money so they can take it.
Well, that's how it works, right? Yeah, taxes are the price we pay to live in a civilized society. I mean, you guys do like taxes, don't you? You don't like taxes?
What happened?
they pay for Southwestern Community College. You don't think your $46 a unit is paying for this class, do you? I hope you don't think that, because that barely pays for the utilities to keep the lights on.
Isn't that local tax?
No. California is very strange. All the money goes to the state and Sacramento, and then they dole it out, except for a few community colleges which were grandfathered in, like MiraCosta. And if you teach at MiraCosta, you get an instant raise. We had a couple people. One guy just left. Left the MiraCosta. I'm sure he got a big raise. Okay. So now, what else? All right. So last, derivatives. Ooh. This is all you have to know about derivatives, folks. They are speculative. What's the word that we?
Gambling,
right. Securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset. What? They point to something else. You're buying this, but it's pointing to over here. So it derives its value from usually a stock, but there are many different types of options and futures. Options and futures. Futures are mostly for commodities, pork bellies, oil, corn. And so these things are very radioactive, folks. They're dangerous. You can make a lot of money and then lose it all the next day. Do we want you to do that? I don't want you to do it. I don't want to invest in these things. You can't invest in these things. They are speculations. And again, many in the financial world, myself included, again, you're going to hear different viewpoints, do not categorize these things as investments. And in 2008, derivative speculators did not feel so all alone. Usually they're the only ones who are proud to have only lost 30%. I only lost 30% last year. You don't believe me, do you? I had one student, brilliant guy, but he wanted to learn how to buy it. He was already doing it. But he wanted to learn more from a professional academic. And at the very end of the semester, he was saying, well, have you read anything by Andrew Lloyd? Yeah, and I really didn't do that. I looked at him, and he's saying, well, I did this and I did this. And then this was the last day of class. And he said, well, are you sure that you can't do well? I said, look, I forget his name, Ferdumbul, actually. I would really love to compare somebody who does this for a living, this is the way they invest, over the long term, and see how well they stack up against my returns or somebody else's returns or more buy and hold. And because, if I come to my wife and say, hey, dear, we just lost 30-40%, she was funny. She was asking me during 2008, how are we doing? I said, oh, just fine, dear. hang on, we can do it. And he goes, well, I've been wiped out totally 4 times. And all the students just looked over it. And I said, well, I can't take that kind of risk. I just can't do that. I can't go to my wife and say, dear, remember the retirement account that we used to have?
Is that another way of saying it? Has no skill involved, it's purely luck.
You know, I wouldn't say that, but you better believe it. Luck. I wouldn't say no skill at all. We're gonna hang on a minute. We'll get back to that.
You can't call yourself good.
Just wait a minute. We'll get to it. Okay. We have to move up. We got to move faster. We're getting behind. My apologies. Okay. So now, what are our emphasis in this course? We're going to emphasize stocks, bonds, and spend a little time on cash, but it's always in the back of our heads, right, that we can always take our financial investments and throw them into cash and mutual funds. For the vast majority of investors, these are the most popular, these are the most important financial investment options. So here's where the ABCDs come in. This is checking for comprehension. This is also showing you what typical questions on the exam will look like. Investment companies that pool investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities, investors to get diversification and professional money management. What are these? Short-term, common stocks, bonds, or mutual funds? Look at all those D's. Right. Mutual fund is the popular term. Investment company is the legal term. What represent ownership in a corporation? Investors receive dividends and capital gains or capital losses. Hybrid securities, common stocks, bonds, or short-term securities. Right, stocks. Oh, we got a few B's, a few C's there, a few C's. No, bonds are loans. Remember, they're not ownership, they're loans. So there's a little bit of confusion there. So this is common stocks. Okay. When people use the term stock, they're also they're normally talking about common stocks. What are investments with very little risk and correspondingly very little return? Often used as a place to park your money for emergency fund of 3 to 6, 9 months investment and income. Hybrid, common bond, or short term. There you go. These are short. Oh, we got some C's. We got some C's. Now these are short term. Park your money at 3 to 6 months. You wouldn't normally buy a bond for 3 to 6 months. You buy a bond for 3 to 6 years or 30 years. And so low risk, low return. I'm sorry if I'm going through this very quickly, but it's up there. You study these. And then fixed income securities that represents loans to corporations, municipalities, state and local governments, federal government. Investors receive interest and a promise to repay. Look at all those C's. Okay, that's it. That's bonds, right? Bonds are fixed income. You know what you're going to get. And lastly, what are securities designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments with the opportunity for capital growth of equity? Investments examples include preferred stock and convertible bonds. Right, hybrids, stocks and bonds, advantages and disadvantages of both. And then what are speculative securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset? Examples include options. Look at all those A's, right, derivatives. You can make a lot of money, you can lose a lot of money, and luck has a lot to do with it. And then lastly, what can we read? This is not A, B, C, or D. What can we reasonably expect from stocks? 8, 9, 10%, right? Bonds?
3 to 6.
Now I put 4 to 8, but it's 3 to 6 nowadays. Short-term securities? 1 to 3. I put 2 to 5. Mutual funds? Depends on what the mutual fund investments. Hybrid securities? A little bit less than bonds, a little bit more than bonds and less than stocks. And then derivatives, minus something. Cool? Okay. So now, we are ready to concentrate. So stretch, everybody stretch. We are ready. I didn't bring my water bottle, did I? Oh, poopy. We are now ready to encapsulate the entire semester. This is it, folks. This is the entire semester in about 35 minutes. Because once you've understood this, once you have internalized this, then you can take a look at all the different investment alternatives and understand, you know, what you're getting yourself into. Right? So that's important. It's very important in my humble opinion. Or as Mr. Peter Lynch says, make sure you know your investment. Make sure you buy what you know. And so let's go back to return. Over the long term, equity stocks have produced the best results. 8, 9, 10%, that's what I tell people, but some have done a whole lot better. Fixed income securities, bonds, 2 to 4, 4 to 6, but that's the old numbers. And then cash, 1 to 3. And then mutual funds will more or less, often less, reflect the underlying assets that they invest in. So here, from 1926 to 2016, is what $1. Now notice I go 1, 10, 100. What's this called? Anybody know what this is called? You math fans? It's the y-axis. I'm sorry. You're right. But what is it when you go 1, 10, instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you go 1, 10, 100, 10 to the first, 10 to the second, 10 to the third. That's called a logarithmic scale, exponential logarithmic scale. Right? And so it's meant to take something that goes like this, whee, and turn it into a line. But look at how well stocks have done. Now forget small company stocks. Even the people who made these numbers will tell you, be careful. Small company stocks are very tricky. They will do better than long-term, large company stocks. But in the meantime, you'll lose a ton of money. But look at how well $1 did. This is the Standard & Poor's 500, whatever that is. Bonds have done, you know, okay, a dollar became 120 bucks, but not like stocks, right? This is where the growth is. And then treasury bills, which is a proxy, this is a substitute for cash, has, you know, turned a dollar into $22, which is basically what a dollar was in 1926. It's worth about $22. I mean, Yeah, a dollar in 1926 was worth about $22 now. And then inflation. That dollar has become $13. So, intellectually, you look at this, and where would you want your money to be for the long term? Stocks, right? So intellectually, as Mr. Warren Buffett says, investing is simple. But it ain't easy. Because what kind of risk did we incur? Hang on a minute. This is an even longer time frame, going back to 1800. And the reason we include this one is because it has gold on it. And you'll hear people say, well, if you don't dig it up from the ground, it ain't worth anything. And that guy was a senator. And now his son is a senator from Kentucky. Rand Paul, Ron Paul, his father. That's what they believe. If you don't dig it from the ground, it's not worth anything. I sure would like to have a share of Apple back in 1998, when Apple almost disappeared and they had to be bailed out by none other than Microsoft. Some of you weren't alive then. I was. Yes?
You know how people are starting to talk about the standard of money, like the value of money is going down because it's no longer correlated to
gold?
So would it make sense to go back to...
No. No, no country on the earth has gold as their standard. And we can't do it right now because I'm a little behind. I apologize. But I'd be happy to sit down and talk, or we'll throw it away. We'll throw it in somewhere. Why gold? We'll eventually get to gold. Why is gold what it is?
Because they say like coins back in the day now are worth like $13, like in comparison to like...
Oh, sure. But that's because of collectors.
No, because of what they're made of, like the silver.
Oh, if you melted it down.
Yeah.
Well, I think it would be worth more to a collector, assuming it's in good condition. A collector will pay you more than what the metal is worth.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. I'm not in that world.
Of course.
Yeah, he thinks Ephraim agrees because of the authenticity. This is a real coin, unless it's a fake, right? And
it can't be reminted.
Oh yes, it can.
When you,
why not? There are frauds out there. I'm sure there are. I'm sure there are, and I'm sure there are people who are paid big money to find those frauds.
The authenticity can't be read.
Why not? I don't understand. Why couldn't somebody read just... I mean, it's a metal. It hasn't changed. Why couldn't you find one that looks... You find a real one, and you make a mint that makes the... What?
It's aged.
Oh, because of the aging.
Yeah, because you see the metal, and then throughout the metal it has corrosion, and it has other things.
Why couldn't you mimic the corrosion? You know, I'm Italian, right? I'm Italian from Philadelphia. You ever been to Philadelphia? You're not missing anything. Okay, anyway, so we Italians in Philadelphia, we know the difference between a friend and a good friend. Do you know the difference between a friend and a good friend? Oh, yeah, well, he'll get you one. Okay? A friend will help you move, but a good friend will help you move a body. So remember that. Everybody in Philadelphia is a good friend. Okay, so look at when gold does well. 1860s. What was going on? That was before the gold rush. Civil War, right. 1930s. Depression, 1940s. And then gold started to decouple from inflation, the consumer price index. And then it started, it elevated to $800 an ounce in 1989, it was down to 250. Elevated to 1700. Now it's down to about 1200. So gold, again, is like Bitcoin. It's a pure speculation. You have to buy low, sell high. Because in and of itself, it's really not worth that much. Does it pay dividends? Does it pay interest? Does it make new products? Does it find new markets? It's beautiful, yes.
Well, couldn't you say that it's actually like a tangible...
Yes, I could say that.
So wouldn't that provide like inherent worth, since like every civilization likes gold?
Yes.
Bitcoin's like...
And what can you do with the gold? Tell me what
sell
you...
It.
Sell it. That's right. That's right. It's pure speculation. Now, that's not true. I swear for your teeth. Okay, dentists will tell you that gold is the best stuff for your teeth. But they got other stuff to do that. It's great for jewelry. It's great for electronics, but again, they have other stuff that can take their place. So gold in and of itself is only worth what somebody's going to pay for it. And people say, well, isn't that the truth of the dollar? No. No, 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 no. And we're getting off tangent, but we'll come back to this. We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. Okay, so it is no accident, dear students, that stocks and bonds have produced better returns than short-term investments. No accident. Oh, by the way, again, I asked this question already. If somebody shows you this, not knowing anything else, what investment would you want to invest in? Stocks, right. But, okay, so let's continue. It is no accident that stocks and bonds have produced better returns than short-term investments, cash. Otherwise, why would you bother? Why would investors assume the higher risk of stocks and bonds? Why wouldn't they just assume, and then you see it's in italics, so that's important, it's probably going to be on the test, what's called the risk-free rate of return. In other words, what can we do with our money so that we are not going to lose it? And when the risk-free rate of return is quoted, it is specifically, normally they use the 3-month Treasury bill. Now, what the hell is that? We'll discuss it on Tuesday. So they look at what Treasury bills are paying 3 months, and they say, there's your risk-free rate of return. Now, you could probably find a better one or a worse one, but that's the one they quote. The risk premium is the reward for bearing risk. It's the extra return that an asset will give you over that Treasury bill. And this is from your book. Again, ignore small company stocks. But over the long term, large company stocks have done almost 12%. Right? The Treasury bills have done 3.5%. So there's an 8% risk premium. In other words, if I'm going to invest in stocks, they better do better than Treasury bills, or why would I bother? Now, again, forget small company stocks, but bonds. Bonds will give you a 3%, 2.5% risk premium. Far less risky than stocks, and I still do better than the risk-free rate of return. I still do better than savings accounts. Cool? And so risk versus reward, risk versus return. Investment return is very straightforward. How much did you start with? How much did you end with? There's your return. But measuring risk, the risk you took to receive that return is far more difficult. Each year, the investment community measures the average annual return and then the amount of variance from the average return. And using statistics, the resulting measures of risk are called variance and standard deviation. And so we will leave the calculations for your statistics class, folks. Don't worry. You don't have to learn how to do this. You just look it up on the Infernal Net. Suffice to say that the higher the variance and the standard deviation, the riskier the investment. The higher the variance and standard deviation, the more the investment return will deviate from the average annual return. Can you see the screen? You sure? Okay, because there's a couple spaces back there. So I know that it's stupid. What the hell does this mean? It's summation. You see it on your spreadsheet, right? And so what you do is you take over the number of years, say you got 80 years or whatever, every year you take the return for that year, and then you subtract the average return over the 80 years. And then you square it. Why do you do that? Because if you don't, the negatives and the positives will cancel each other out. So you have to turn it all into positive. That's why you square it. Then you divide it by the number of years minus 1. Why don't you just divide it by number of years? But it takes statistics. And that gives you what's called the variance. Take the square root of that, and you get the standard deviation. So I know it's scary, but don't worry. You're not going to do it. These are just fancy schmancy terms for you can lose a lot of money. All right? And that's what it basically means. The higher the standard deviation, the greater the chance that you're not going to get what you think you're going to get in any 1 year. In fact, you know going in you're not going to. So this is a distribution graph. Frequency distribution, have you seen these before? What does it mean? Well, when you look at any 1 year, for example, 2007, that means the return of stocks was between 0 and 10%. All right? 1955, it was between 30 and 40%. And so we aggregate all these together, and it turns out that we see something that should look very familiar. What's it called? The bell curve, the normal curve, the normal distribution. It turns out that nature's very been kind to us. in so many different ways, nature, we see a bell curve, and stocks are no different. So, do you know what next year you're going to get? No. But you have a pretty good idea that it's going to be somewhere around here, but it could be as high as 55 or as low as minus 40. Look at 2008. And then, in the 1980s and 90s, stocks went in two directions, up and way up. And in 2000, everybody said, ooh, 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 is it too late to get in? Year 2000, new millennial, blue skies, internet, productivity gains as far as the eye can see. 2000 minus 9%, 2001 minus 15%, 2002 minus 22%. Three punches in the gut right then and there. It was like water torture. Unlike 2008, where, bang, you lost 40%. Actually, 50-some. I forget what it was. No, I forget exactly what the number was. But from peak to trough, it was 56%. From the high to the low, it was 56%. Yes?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but that only matters if you're trying to sell in 2008, right?
You're right. You're actually,
you can just pretend that it didn't happen.
But how easy is that, Efren? Let me ask you a question. How easy is it? Has it happened to you? That's when you're going to know, folks, when you get punched in the gut and you go, oh dear, everything's fine. That's when you're going to earn your money. Hold. Hold, right? Hold. Or buy more. Unless you believe the world is going to end, then get the hell out of the Northern Hemisphere. Go down to Tierra del Fuego and learn to raise goats.
That would be the best strategy, right?
If the world, 2008, I didn't think the world was going to end. But if the world does end, and there's no food at the Vons, and there's no gas at the Chevron station, no clothes at the Gap, the cell phones aren't working, SDG&E is now pumping out electricity, trash isn't being picked up, the sewers are backed up, the hospitals, the schools, the banks, the police departments and the fire departments are all shuttered. Are you going to worry about your stock portfolio? We're going to be digging for beetle grubs. I hear moth soup is very tasty. I've never tried it. I have had chapulines, which are very good. Yeah, they're tasty. Okay. So, bugs. So, you see what's going on here? You don't know what you're going to get next year, but over the long term, assuming the world does not end, and I'm very optimistic about the next 20, 30 years. I think I told you that already. The new technologies are so exciting. So this is the normal distribution. And this is what we said a few slides ago that you went, huh? If you look at the average, which for the Standard & Poor's 500 is about 12% over decades, and you see one standard deviation away, right? One standard deviation away either way, which is about 15%, about two-thirds of the returns hit here. So there's a two-thirds chance next year that the return is going to be between minus 8 and about 32. If you go out two standard deviations, there's about a 95% chance that it's going to hit between minus 28 and plus 52. You go out three standard deviations, and now you're at 99%. There's a 99% chance that you'll go between minus 50 and plus 70. Are you with me? It's probability. And you hear about the 100-year flood? Okay, the 100-year flood just happened. It's not going to happen for another 100 years, right? Wrong. It could happen next year. There's the same probability. It's 1 in 100, and the two numbers could bump, bump, right in a row, hit you. Are you with me? Make sense? Okay, good. Good, 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 good. So here are some frequency distribution graphs. And they're not very useful because they're all the same size. What they should be is this guy should be a whole lot higher than these. But it's just another way of looking at it. The wider the distribution, and again, screw small company stocks, the higher the standard deviation. 20%, 7, 200, yeah, these two, forget this guy. You see? And then till finally, down to treasury bills, very small. Does that make sense? If not, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. We'll come back to it later. But here's another view. The higher the average annual return, the larger the standard deviation. Don't get this wrong on the exam. It's bad for my self-esteem. All right? So now, we can come back to the slide we saw on Tuesday, remember? Sweden may have had the best average annual return, but look at the standard deviation as opposed to the U.S. Well, I don't know if I'd call them. They wouldn't say ridiculous. They would come back and say, look, we have free health care. Our students don't have to go in debt to their eye bills to go to school. So it's a different culture, whereas we say here, ridiculous taxes. But they say, look what we're getting for our taxes. Now, I'm sure you'll find people who agree with you in Sweden, and they've already moved to the United States. So it's cultural. They're very, in fact, what is one of the most happiest country is on this list. Do you know which country it is?
Happiest?
Denmark. Yeah. Denmark's the happiest country. That's what the sociologists tell us. How do you measure happiness? But you understand? The United States, this is why we take ourselves for granted. But the United States is the best place to invest, folks. That doesn't mean there are not good other places. There are many good places. The best company might not be in the United States. But as a whole, our culture, pro-business, is such that we have the lowest standard deviation. Cool? Got it? Okay, continue. So, does you got it yet? Use once high's return, you're going to get high's risk. You're going to lose some money, maybe all your money, real estate investors. And if anybody tells you differently, they're lying. It's that simple. If someone tells you got 12% risk-free rate of return, they're after you. They're going to try to screw you. Hang on to your wallet, run away. They're lying. And they're breaking the law. If you get involved investing, you're going to get on some mailing list. Maybe they'll figure it out because you're clicking on certain things on the internet, and Google will say, Facebook, they're interested in investing, but start getting ads. So when you start to see advertisements of 300% or 3,000%, and you will, don't get me wrong, you will, sit on your hands, grab your wallet, they're breaking the law, because it sounds like we have free speech in the United States, right? They say, well, why can't you say that? No. In the investment world, in the financial services world, there's no such thing as free speech. It is highly regulated. And it's like the FDA. If you all of a sudden, hey, I got this thing that'll cure hoarseness or cure cancer, just take this injection. They're doing that in TJ with the stem cells. It'll give you cancer. If you do that, who's going to come down on you? The FDA. And they will come down on you like a ton of bricks. If you're saying that these people can get a 500% return, the SEC will send a letter. Stop that. And then you don't stop it. And they say, we told you to stop it. And then they say, now we're really angry. We're going to come after you. And then they get up and walk away and start something else. You don't believe me, do you? Well, let's take a look. On the website, is this guy. How's it look? Can you see it? This was an ad on Yahoo Finance, which is actually not, they've ruined it. But Yahoo Finance is a very popular finance website. And here's this guy, Michael Parnas, who turned $33,000 in $7 million in only 2 years. Free book and DVD. Only $7, so it can't be free. Do you think he can do this?
No.
He can do it because he's bald. I don't think he's in jail. I think they sent him a cease and desist order. But, oh my goodness. So I did the numbers.
Well, they did a little more than that to Jordan Belfort, though.
Well, but he was doing illegal material. This is the guy from Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
To do this, you have to have a 1,356% per year or 25% per month. And they'll say, yeah, but with our options trading strategy, you can make 25% in one day. And they'll lose it all tomorrow. They don't put that in the advertisement. So you're going to stay away from these people? Why would you listen to a goofball who jumps around and gets... And there are lots of them, folks. Check him out. Wade Cook, he was doing that for decades. They finally shut him down. So, isn't somebody doing it? isn't somebody making a lot of money with stocks? Yes, it is true. Some people make tremendous rates of return, but those people are not investors. Those people are traders. Those people are speculators. And we will make that distinction over and over and over again. I can help you become a very good investor. I know I can. I cannot help you become a good trader or speculator. Especially with that gentleman there who told me who he was. He identified as a speculator and lost all his money four times. And this was one of the most, look him up if you're interested. Jesse Livermore, he was one of the first self-identified speculators, traders, and he wrote a book or a couple books on it. The speculator is not an investor. Of course, he wrote it a long time ago, so it was his. His object is not to secure a steady rate, steady return on his money at a good rate of interest. No, but to profit from either a rise or a fall in the price of whatever he may be speculating in. Buy low, sell high. Hope that there's somebody else who will. Yes?
Would you recommend investing when the market crashes?
Sure, but I recommend investing when the market's doing well, too. If you're in it for the long term, if you have a 5, 10, 20-year time horizon, I believe stocks are the way to go. Now, there are other choices. If you want to get involved in real estate, great. That's a lot harder. With $50 a month, $25 a month, you can start investing in stocks. You can't do that in real estate. They want 25% down. So you want to buy a $400,000 condo to rent or duplex for $500,000? You got to come up with $100,000, $150,000. How many people have that lying around the house? Not too many, right? Being a trader can be very profitable, but it's also very stressful and very perilous. And you are up against the best in the world. Have you ever been in a batting cage? Now the batting cage, I've never done this. And that ball's coming by you at 70 miles an hour? Anybody?
Of course.
How'd you feel?
It was weird.
Scary.
Yeah.
Scary. And then realizing the majors, how fast that ball coming by? 95, 100. You don't have time to blink. Can you take a little golf ball, is that small, and hit it 400 yards down the fairway in four shots?
Accurately.
Four shots. Accurately, no. See, just because you or I can't do it doesn't mean there are people who can, who can't. Can you dunk a basketball?
No,
but people who do it can make a lot of money, right? And the same thing is true in this world. There are people who, in the speculation world, in the trading world, who do make a lot of money. But it's very stressful. And you think you're going to do well, folks. Maybe you will. Probably you won't. I know one guy's still trying. He didn't take my class, but I wish him well. And we don't have time. I mean, we might have time. Let's take a couple more minutes. We're going to tell you a little story here. But let's go. So, what is a realistic rate of return for me? After you have taken this course, you will have a strong foundation, a strong knowledge of the most popular types of investments. You will speak with authority, not like your brother-in-law or the uncle who thinks they know what they're talking about. We will discuss in detail stocks, bonds, a little bit of cash, in mutual funds in detail. You will also know what levels of return and what levels of risk you should reasonably expect to receive. And if you are a patient, long-term investor, I believe it is realistic to expect 8, 9, 10%. I'm certainly trying it myself, and so far, so good. Of course, as we will reiterate time and time again, there are no guarantees. So the question is now, is that good enough? For young people, yes. The answer is yes. It turns out that the answer to this question is yes. The news is good. If you start early, if you are patient and consistent, if you do not get too cocky and greedy, if you do not chase after every next big thing that comes along, and most importantly, you don't panic when the market swoons, because it's going to happen. In your lifetime, you're going to see 2, 3, 4 maybe major downturns. That's what history tells us. And it's when that happens and how you react that's going to determine, in my humble opinion, how well you do over the long term. The trick is to take advantage of the time value of money, which is also called compound rate of return. Now, on the website, we have, I might show you on Tuesday because I don't want to show you right now, but we have a worksheet that you don't have to do the calculations. We do them in 121. that show you how well you can do over time if you get 10%, 11%, 8%, and you consistently invest. Cool? So maybe we'll have time. I'm trying to get through this. I apologize. So the time value of money is the amount to which a sum you invest now will increase based on a specified rate of return in time period. It's called compounding. In the 121 class, we learn how to go from the present into the future, future value. In fact, if you're in the 121 class, that's the next lecture. We're going to do it right next. If you want to stick around, go right ahead. It's a stream of investments, an annuity. We also learn later on how to go from the present back to the future. I'm sorry, did I say that right? No, from the future back to the present. Huh? Wait till we get there. It's not as hard as it sounds. It sounds harder than it is. It's actually very easy to do. And so, let's not do them. Okay, one last comment. Okay, hey. Do we like to avoid large losses? Yes, we do. Somebody comes along and says, I got an 85% return for you. Or I got a 10% return. But then next year it's going to go down 50%, and this one's going to go down, going to go up 9%. Which one do you want? You know B, because I've already let it on to you. But people will go, well, I'm still ahead, right? It's like, no, it doesn't work that way. After the first year, your $100 becomes $185 or $110. After the next year, the numbers going down are a whole lot harder than the numbers going up. So avoid large losses. But it's going to happen. Okay, so now, before we embark on the process of identifying and familiarizing ourselves with longer-term, higher-yielding investments, let's learn how to and where to park our money using short-term investments. But first, wait one second, A, B, C, D. Do not get this one wrong on the exam, okay? The greater the variance in standard deviation of the average annual return of investments, the greater the risk, the more volatile. The lesser the risk, the less volatile. There's no correlation, no relationship whatsoever. Or, huh? Standard what? I hate statistics. Oh, you better have A. You understand? A. The greater, the higher the standard deviation, the greater you need. Okay? It's bad for my self-esteem. Don't get it wrong. Okay, now how much time we have? Don't have enough time. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you a little story about one of the world's greatest bond traders and why you do not want to be. And maybe you do. Maybe you do. In which case, you're going to need a whole. Don't wait. Don't leave yet. Sit down. I'm going to show you something else. Sit down. Wait. Why you really probably don't want to become a trader. But if you do, congrats. You know, wish you a lot of luck. Now, let's quick now take a look at the. We're just going to look at. You know what we're going to look at? We're going to just take a look at the answer key. And what it turns out, okay, let's see if we can make this a little bigger. Okay, these are what we're going to see in the, this. We're going to do these in the next class. But here's a guy who starts putting away $400 a month, which sounds like a lot of money, but after you've been making payments to Ford, it's like, that's not a whole lot of money. I'm making the darn car payments. Yeah, Ben, good old Ben, bend over. And so he starts putting $5,000 away at age 30. In 30 years, getting 10%. Not bad, right? Here's a woman that starts at age 20, putting that same $400 a month away. Now, most people at age 20 still in college, they can't afford that, but if you're in the military, you can, right? She does that for 10 years, and then she stops. She has $80,000 at age 30. She has $1.3 million at age 60. And here's, you see, the numbers get big. That's that exponential curve. And then the last guy, he starts at age 18, putting $5 a day away, $150 per month, and he winds up with $2 million. Lucky members of the great American economic machine, the great global machine now, you have that ability to do that. And then the people in their 20s, I mean their 30s, late 30s, 40s, 50s, why didn't you tell me this 25 years ago? Sorry. Okay, so study. You know how to get download the presentation. Put together your own little study guide. Next week we will finish up chapter one. We'll tell you the story of John Goodfreund and John Merriweather and try to scare you away from being a trader and speculator. And then we'll discuss short-term investments, get them out of the way, they're not that hard, and we'll be done with our first chapter. I'm ready to start mutual funds. Okay, there's no football this weekend. You got plenty of time to study. Right? What? That's your homework every day. What?
Only the biggest game.
The biggest game? I don't know.